Good morning, and thanks for joining us here at KBOO Portland. It's 11:01. My name is Toni Tabor-Roberts, and I'm pleased to welcome by phone some guests this morning who will be discussing the new documentary film, The Garden, which is opening at the Hollywood Theater this evening. First of all, we've got, I think one of the producers is actually going to be joining us in just a moment. But first, I'm going to introduce Vivian Nassif, who is one of the film's co-producers. Hello, Vivian.
Hi. Great. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And in a few minutes, we will hopefully have one of her friends, Julie, who is also one of the executive producers.
Executive producers. Yeah, yes. One of the executive producers. Exactly.
Great. So The Garden is a feature documentary about the plight of a very special community garden that rose up in South Central Los Angeles after the LA riots of 1992. Would you mind telling us the story of The Garden?
Sure. It was actually the largest urban garden in the United States. And as you said, it came after the 92 riots as a form of healing for the city. And basically, the documentary follows the fight of these farmers to try and save this beautiful oasis while politicians and power and money tried to destroy it. So it's our documentary was followed for almost 4 years of this struggle.
Okay, so it's been 4 years. Could you give us a little bit of background about the garden? It's quite a large garden. It's from what I read.
It is. It was 14 acres, and approximately 350 families, mostly Latinos, had their little plots there, and with what they farmed and what they grew, a lot of them actually. Survived with that. They lived off of it.
And so what happened? What was the fight about?
It is a very, very complicated story, which we explain fully in the documentary. But basically, Ralph Horowitz, who was the original owner of the place, was one. They came to him and they said, we need this for eminent domain. And they took it away from him and gave him $5 million for the land. For many, many years, he kept trying to fight to get it back, because supposedly it was supposed to be a trash incinerator, and then they didn't use it as a trash incinerator. They used it for something much better, but that was his way of trying to fight it back. So for years and years, he went to court and lost and lost and lost. And then suddenly, one day in a very mysterious backroom deal, he got the land back about 12, 13 years later for $5 million, which at least it was supposed to be worth $16 million.
Yeah, that sounds pretty low for some piece of land in Los Angeles. Okay, so actually we've got Julie Bergman-Sender has now joined us. Hello, Julie.
Hello, how are you?
Thanks for joining us. Julie is one of the executive producers of the film. So, Julie, maybe you can jump in and tell us, how did you as the filmmakers get involved in covering this story?
Well, we had a relationship for quite a while with Scott Hamilton Kennedy, the director and producer of the film. You know, the documentary world in Los Angeles is teeny, and the documentary world in general is small. So we all know each other quite well. And he started discussing the story with us quite early on, and we were incredibly taken with the situation. And our investigative minds sort of got immediately engaged and wanted to do whatever we could as both filmmakers and as colleagues of Scott's to help him get this film made and to also, you know, help the farm itself as best we could.
And so how did you go about identifying some of the characters that appear in the film?
Well, you know, if you've seen the film, it's interesting because the
I actually haven't seen it yet.
Oh, well, there's this incredible quote from one of the reviews in a newspaper that when the film came out a few months ago that said that if John Steinbeck had written the screenplay to Chinatown, this would have been it. And Chinatown is an interesting comparison because there is a cast of characters in Chinatown that are the cast not only of characters but also of the jobs they hold. And so in many ways the characters in the film presented themselves because each of them had a role to play both on the side of the David and on the other side of the Goliath. And so it was a nice structure for the film, because for me as a filmmaker, the best films are where the structure itself is pretty clear and transparent, but the complication lies in the relationships and how they play themselves out. And this story, whether it's true, which it is, or if it had been fiction, which it could have been as well, the cast of characters is an organic outgrowth of the situation.
I see. And as you mentioned, the film does cover a lot of ground, from this community building aspect that the garden represents to sustainability and growing their own food and immigrant rights to urban development and corporate power. Maybe one of you, maybe Viviane, you could talk about what you're hoping that audiences might come away with when they see this film.
I'll give you, for example, one of the things that I hope that they can come away with. My husband's boss came to see the film, and he's usually a very serious, quiet man who doesn't show emotion at all. And when the film ended, he came to me literally with tears, and he said, he was supposed to be in Cannes at the moment for some reason. He goes, I would have been there angry, telling people off for one reason or another. And he said, instead, here I am, completely inspired, completely filled up by these people and their voice. And he said, I want my 13-year-old to come and see this film and see what life is about and to fight for what she believes in and to see what's right. And I was just like, oh, my God. That's one of the things that I hope. And besides that, like you said, it's everything from sustainability to how this earth should run and what is right and what is wrong and fighting for your beliefs. And as a Latina, I am actually from Mexico City, it gives you all these people suddenly that were so shy and quiet. It gave them a purpose to realize that they have a voice and they can fight for what they believe in and they don't have to be quiet. And that when something's important, you fight for it no matter what.
I also think that the other thing that's interesting is the confluence of events of where we are in the world right now and the issues that are being examined around, what is of value and what is meaningful. And this film speaks to that, I think, in a really prescient way, to understanding, yes, there are a lot of people that will see this situation in the film as a very black and white. He was the landowner. They didn't have paper saying it was theirs. It's a very clear-cut case. Well, yes and no, It depends upon what you consider to be ownership. It depends upon what is of greater public good. And all of those are things which I think, in general, people are much more interested and willing, partly thanks to the president, I think, to consider the greater value that things are holding now.
It does seem especially timely now. Thanks, Julie. Mm-hmm. So you have a pretty diverse team of folks on the film that have a really interesting range of experiences. The director, Scott Hamilton Kennedy, is a documentary filmmaker, but he also has made music videos and feature films and documentaries. All of you have all this different kind of experience. Perhaps one of you can describe a little bit more of the style of the film that we might see.
Julie?
Go
ahead, Julie.
I think that often the best films of this kind are dictated by, the style, rather, is dictated by the story and the subject. And I think what Scott did so beautifully is the camera became our eyes, in a way. Mm-hmm. I don't think we were ever aware of beautiful angles or fantastic edits, because I think it really, I think there's a place for that, especially when you're talking about music videos and other kinds of entertainment. But I thought his choices to be incredibly invisible served this material beautifully, so that, the kind of reaction that Vivian was describing that her husband's boss had, a lot of people were able to have that because they didn't feel manipulated by the camera.
Exactly.
They didn't feel manipulated by the storytelling or the storytellers. They felt they were being shown something that was happening and unfolding before their eyes, as we did as filmmakers.
And actually that was very important for Scott, that even though he obviously had a point of view, he wanted it to be as fair as possible and to try to just be a window as to what happened in a hole. And even friends of mine who don't think the way that I do were like, wow, you guys really were fair, and it really was Anais too. As complicated a story as they actually, you know, was able to show in a way what really, really did happen. And also the music was a huge, it was really important for Scott. I know that he wanted it to bring the help, the mood. And so he actually had Gabriel Tenorio, who was magical, just sit and as he was watching the film, just play his music, just feel it. And so I think that also helped a lot to show the style that he wanted.
Okay. And and you know, that seems also the power of documentary filmmaking is to distill a story that can be very complicated into something that people can understand. Mm-hmm. So maybe if Viviane, would you mind giving us a little bit of a teaser for the film and describe the story of one of the characters that we would see tonight if we came to see this film tonight?
Sure. I mean, oh, there's so many that I love because I got very personally attached. But let's see. Like, I'll give you an example. Don Manu, Dominic, who's the co-producer, said that when this is all over, he will never forget just sitting and having lunch with Don Manu. Even though neither of them spoke much of each other's languages, they spoke a higher language. And he said he's never going to forget just sitting there. And Don Manu is a man who's in his 70s, who you talk to him and he's just very manner, you know, soft-spoken and calm. But when you see him out there, you would swear he's 20 years old. And he's just this strong, strong man, and he doesn't stop. And he's like that. He always said that, like, you know, if he's at home and they just see this old man that doesn't do anything, but there he's strong and he's, you know, and he's competent and he brings home food. And it's just, it's that strength that you're going to see. And you're going to see somebody like Josefina, who at the beginning of the film, you'll see she's extremely shy. And by the end, she is fighting with her words and with her heart and her passion. And she's, you will see her and be completely inspired. And if you say, if she can do it, if she can actually get up there, and all of us can, and to never be quiet and when something isn't correct. And I mean, there's just so many. There's Donelli, who also will touch you tremendously, who will cry and make you cry because of this used to mean everything for him. And when it was taken away for me, I was mostly worried about him and if he would survive, because this for them was their life.
Okay. And so, actually, let me just remind listeners that we are listening to KBOO Community Radio. My name's Tony, and I'm here with Julie and Viviane, who are both producers of the film The Garden, which is opening tonight at the Hollywood Theater. I'll tell you a little bit more about how to find out what time the screenings are at the end of this chat. So, Julie, you mentioned that you started making this film about 4 years ago.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the process of making this film and how you all got involved?
Start, Julie, and then I'll go.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think if when people see the film, they'll see that at the end of the film, when the credits come up, there's a list of not only special thanks, which there always are at the end of a documentary, especially a mile long, but also several camera credits. And that's because, essentially, you know, you make these films out of love and passion, and you don't necessarily get paid to make them. And so Scott and Vivian, in particular, were constantly on the phone saying, there's a hearing at 6, who can go down with the camera? And you know, as the film was being shot, it didn't, to someone who's an untrained eye in terms of watching how documentaries are made, would think that we were making a home movie. I mean, they wouldn't necessarily have seen that all of this footage was going to be very, very meticulously combed through and a real narrative was going to be created from it.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, somebody said to me the other day, oh, I would love to make a documentary of the making of this documentary. And I said, it's like watching paint dry. Because everything moves very slowly, and then every once in a while it moves very quickly, and then it goes back to moving very slowly. So I can't honestly tell you the process, because it seems so natural to the way storytelling emerges for all of us, I would say.
Just organically kind of
evolved. Yeah, I mean, you just get kind of hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess the only way to make a kind of lowbrow comparison would be people I know who are addicted to soap operas. You know, you don't mean to watch that first episode that gets you completely hooked into somebody's storyline. But this is kind of a slightly maybe more acceptable version of becoming addicted to soap operas.
Yeah. And did you have something to add, Vivian?
Yeah, well, I mean, the way I got involved was completely random. I was actually in a bus going to Prom, Nevada, to knock on people's doors to have them vote for Kerry. And I was sitting next to Scott, and he started telling me about this magical place that I couldn't believe I hadn't heard about. And because I am Mexican and speak Spanish, and he doesn't, he just asked me to come down there to speak to the people. And as soon as I got down there, I was absolutely hooked by the people, by the place. And when he asked me to be more involved in the project, of course, I couldn't say no. And that's how I started to get involved in this project. But like Julie said, there are so many people who were absolutely instrumental and without whom it would have been impossible to make. And for example, Dominic, the other producer, he heard it on NPR one night, and then that's how it all started.
Oh, he heard about the story on NPR.
Yeah, he heard it, and he and Scott were friends, and they had always wanted to do a project together, and he called them, I guess, in the middle of the night or something and said, I found our project. And same, both of them, as soon as they saw the story, that was it.
Wow. And so what... maybe one of you could speak to what was one of the biggest challenges that you encountered in making this film. It sounds like there was just so many different aspects and different people and layers involved in this. Mm-hmm. Julie?
Well, what's interesting, which people won't necessarily experience when they see the film, but it might be an interesting thing to know going into the theater, is that there were two things happening simultaneously while the film was being made. One was, as Vivian says, we all got very invested personally in the struggle that was happening on this land, and really thought it was an incredibly brave thing for these farmers, not only to decide, as one of the characters says early on in the film, not this time. But to go and seek out a lawyer for representation and to really meet the system where the system works, as opposed to be in protest, solely in protest. They really did believe in the American system of justice and decided to seek it for themselves. So we were very invested in that, equally as invested in that as we were in telling the story in an honest and authentic way. And so there were times when I think, at least I can speak for myself, I sometimes forgot that we were making a film, and I was desperate to try and help, but also to keep the storytelling separate from my own personal feelings about what was going on there, because as a documentarian, I didn't want to be manipulative. I do respect people who disagree with me and think that if they see the truth, that they will come to their own conclusions and maybe change their minds. But it was really an interesting experience making the film, because we were both invested in telling the story truthfully and honestly, but also invested in there being an outcome that we felt was just. And I've never been in that situation before
as
a filmmaker.
I mean, that's a very powerful, experience, it sounds like, making documentaries. And I think that's the sort of the traditional way to look at it is that, the documentarian must keep a distance from the subject. But it sounds like you all really, couldn't help yourselves but really be involved.
Yes. I mean, I learned from Scott, because I hadn't really been involved in doing a documentary like this. And I kept, I'd cry like crazy, and then I'd be, getting into the, ticketing, and he'd be like, Vivian, get off the side. I was like, oh, that's right, I forgot. Like Julie says, you couldn't help it but get completely emotionally involved. And we wanted it so bad to save the, so bad that it was beyond anything else that, we just thought sometimes, we forgot sometimes that we were shooting. And I especially me, I had to forget, okay, we're doing this film, and it's not just about trying to fight for it, but it was a very thin line. And it was very, very, very emotional. I mean, it's one of the things that have touched my heart the most, truly, in my entire life.
And Vivian, so you haven't had as much experience doing documentary films. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, what you learned in making this film about documentary.
I mean, first of all, it's you have to be 100% invested in it, believe in it. Otherwise, I don't think it can happen, because as Julie said, none of us got paid. We did it for free all these years. So you have to completely believe in what you're telling. At least that's what I think. And something inside that feels that it needs to be told, that people need to know. So for me, that was always in my mind. No matter what, like whenever things were just horrible and we were so heartbroken, we're like, but at least people will see it. You know, now it will live forever. People will know the story. And so I think the most important thing above and beyond anything else was that. I mean, just the wanting to do it and never, ever, ever, ever giving up and following through. But there were so many things. I mean, Scott and Julie were, so, you know, were far much further away ahead from me and Dominic, but it's been incredible to watch all that it needs. People can't imagine the work that goes into it, not just, you know, the emotional, but all of it.
Yeah, making documentaries is definitely not, you know, a money-making business always. But you have certainly gotten some success, and I know you recently won an award at the Silver Docks Documentary Film Festival, and you've screened at many prestigious festivals. Can you talk about your experience bringing the festival around the country? I mean, bringing the film around the country?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I recently screened it in Washington, D.C., at the Center for American Progress, and it was kind of a curious screening from my point of view, because it was the first time that we had screened it for, you know, what can be referred to, even though they're progressive, as a kind of establishment Washington audience. And I looked through the guest list, and there were people there from the Agriculture Department and the State Department and various Senate offices, and it was just a really different group of people than what we had been accustomed to screening it, where we've been accustomed to screening it before at either film festivals or in front of audiences of people who we thought we probably knew how they would react to the film. And you know what? They reacted exactly the same way.
Interesting.
Which I found to be really heartening and really interesting, that there's, because the film is so successful, which, again, you never know when you begin that you're going to be able to accomplish these things, it's so successful showing how the wheels turn in a political environment that is easy to translate to other political environments. You see the way the city council works. You see the way the city of Los Angeles works. You see the exchange between people bringing a grievance and the establishment, and how that plays itself out in a way that is so in the weeds that people really come away from the film, regardless of whether they agree or disagree with the outcome. Most people obviously feel very crushed by the outcome. They feel like they've gotten an insight into the way government works that is truly kind of stirring to them, and they start becoming interested in a new way in their own communities, maybe in their own local politics. And I think that's another thing that's definitely timely about this film now, is people are starting to understand that act locally, think globally concept in more than just a bumper sticker.
Mm-hmm.
That really what happens in one city, especially when it comes to social and economic justice issues, really does have a ripple effect in the community, and then in the state, and then federally.
And Julie, you did allude to sort of the ending or the outcome of the situation. Do you want to talk about that, or should we? I wasn't sure.
Well, I mean, the only thing I will say is that, you know, the film takes you on a ride, and it doesn't necessarily deliver the ending that one would want. It delivers the ending that's kind of authentic to what has happened all the way through the film and the story. And the most important thing I think for people to understand when they leave the film is that regardless of the way the film ends, there were a group of people empowered that will stay empowered forever. And that is the
it's very
that
powerful.
Is the accomplishment of going through an experience like this. And I think everybody in their own way, whether it's being part of a PTA or, you know, finding lead in your school's hallways, or you know, any kind of experience that you have where you decide to take it upon yourself to voice what you believe to be an injustice, it's an extremely empowering experience, whether you win or you lose.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just have a couple of minutes left. Vivian, maybe you could talk about, have the folks who were, you know, featured in the film and the community that is in the film, have they seen the film, and what were their thoughts?
Yes. They can't believe it. Josefina keeps crying every single time she sees it, and they're thrilled, and they're just so fulfilled about knowing that their story will live on and that this place that they created will be seen and won't be forgotten. They're extremely happy, at least the ones I've talked to, and it's just been thrilling also for them to see each other, you know, themselves on the big screen. It's very powerful. Some of them are very shy about it, but they're excited, but they're mostly very proud, and a lot of them said that, you know, they're so happy because their children will see what they did, and they're very, very proud.
Great. And just to wrap up, maybe if Julie, you could let us know how folks can find out more about the film and the project?
The best thing for them to do would be to go to thegardenmovie.com, and there they will find a lot of information about the film. They can watch the trailer, the short synopsis of the film. They can read reviews. Because, of course, we all understand that it's a big commitment now to go to a movie at night. There's potential babysitting and dinner and parking and the tickets, and it starts to become, a commitment, especially now. So if they want to do a little research to convince themselves that it's a worthwhile evening to spend.
And there's also information about this
South
community.
Central Farmers. Okay. Yeah, there's actually links to the South Central Farmers to find out where they are, because they're still fighting to take this place back. So you'll get links to that as well in the website, and how to buy the film. I mean, everything's on there.
And you know, I think we would all encourage people to, you know, buy the DVD and host house parties of the film, and encourage urban gardens in their own neighborhoods, and go to farmers markets to buy produce, and to sort of become aware and conscious of this whole, you know, economy that can be supported by us just doing things slightly differently.
Well, it should certainly be supported here in Portland. We love our community gardens and also our farmers markets here. So I want to thank our guest, Julie Bergman-Sender, who is one of the executive producers of The Garden, and co-producer Vivian Nassif. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Yes, their documentary film, The Garden, will open its run at the Hollywood Theater tonight with a screening at 7:30 and one at 9:10. I believe those are the times. And then for further information about the rest of the screenings this week, which it screens all the way through Thursday, you can find the schedule at the Hollywood Theater's website at hollywoodtheater.org. Or you can also call the theater hotline at 503-281-4215. And again, if you'd like more information about the film, it's their website is thegardenmovie.com. Thanks for listening to KBOO, KBOO Community Radio. I'm Tony Tabora-Roberts for KBOO.